Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with me now, Bob Mankoff, cartoon editor of The New Yorker. His new collection of New Yorker cartoons and stories about them is titled After One Famous Cartoon. Caption, how about never? Is never good for you? Hi, Bob, and welcome back to WNYC.
It's a delight to be here, and never has been very good for me.
Yeah, well, it's not been never in our case, because you've been here from time to time.
You know, Brian, I listened to the last segment on parenting, and I want to chime in on that. Okay.
you get guest's prerogative to comment on previous segments, yes.
Yeah. How my parents helped me succeed is by leaving me completely alone and let me draw. My parents were just so thrilled. I was an only child when I was born. Just the fact my mother would put a mirror up to my mouth to make sure I was still fogging it up. So we had unsatisfactory on the board, satisfactory and satisfactory outstanding. Satisfactory was perfectly fine for, you know, my mother. And I just say, I do think there was a certain resilience in that generation, which, you know, they let you alone. And one of the things about this book is sort of the circuitous path I took to whatever success I had. You know, I was a curious kid, but I wasn't a great student. And a joke I make about one of the real things that I would like this book to accomplish is if I can prevent one kid, especially one Jewish kid, from becoming a doctor, a lawyer, or an accountant, I think it will have accomplished its mission.
There's a cartoon in that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's start with that title cartoon. For people who don't know it, can you just describe the drawing and give us the complete caption?
Yeah, sure. It's a busy executive. He's on a desk. He's looking at his appointment book, and he's saying, no, Thursday's out. How about never? Is never good for you? And now that's become sort of a catchphrase. Nancy Pelosi used it when she was talking to Jon Stewart, and it's in the Yale Book of Quotations right near Mao Zedong, another great humorist.
It's such a famous – is this to The New Yorker what Headless Body and Topless Bar is to The New York Post?
I think, although there's a nice little review even in the New York Post of it. There are a number of great cartoons in the New Yorker, and I like to think this is a pretty good cartoon. Peter Stein in the same year did The Two Dogs in Front of the Computer, saying on the internet, no one knows you're a dog. And, of course, going back, Charles Adams and Peter Arno.
And listeners, if you have a New Yorker cartoon posted on your refrigerator, call us up and tell us what it is. 212-433-WNYC 433-9692. If there was ever one you didn't get, call us up. And, you know, that infuriates people when they don't get the New Yorker. In fact, I want to play a clip as people are calling in at 212-433-WNYC of the New Yorker editor-in-chief, David Remnick, on the show admitting that he doesn't always get the cartoons.
I'm going to tell you a little secret on the radio. Once in a while, we'll have a feature in the magazine called I Don't Get It, and we'll have four or five or six cartoons that even we don't get anymore, and I forget why I bought it in the first place, but not too often.
That's hysterical, and I'm glad you shared the secret.
I don't think a day passes, Brian, where somebody doesn't come up to me and has something like that to say about one cartoon or another, and I promise we don't do it deliberately.
We don't do it deliberately, but now I think we're going to start. Actually, there was a whole Seinfeld episode in which Elaine doesn't get the cartoon, and that was written by Bruce Eric Kaplan. So sometimes the cartoons are a bit obscure. You know, you'll have a baseball cartoon where instead of a batter, there's a dog in the batter's box, and he's wagging his tail, and the catcher has his hand out, and that signals that for a batter that you want to go for, that you're going to walk, that divides a lot between people who know about baseball and love it and people who don't and say, that's it, I'm canceling my subscription to The New Yorker.
I like the one in the book that has a baseball theme that's a scoreboard with nine innings, realists versus idealists. And the realists score two runs in the first inning, six runs in the second inning, nine runs in the third inning. The total that they list at the end is zero. the idealists don't score at all during the game, and at the end they list their total as one.
That's so NPR.
To like that?
Oh, I love that cartoon. It's a Dana Fraden cartoon, and I think it's something that the New Yorker cartoons do. They're silly, they're satire, and they can be deeply, deeply philosophical. So that a cartoon like that is not only pasted on refrigerators, it's in textbooks, psychology books, sociology books. And I think that's one of the things that the New Yorker does with cartoon. It really elevates the whole form.
You mentioned the Seinfeld New Yorker cartoon episode. There's a chapter, folks, about that in this book, complete with panels from Seinfeld and everything. So we pulled a clip, and it's, in fact, the exact one that you referred to, where Elaine is meeting with an editor at The New Yorker, and she doesn't get one of the cartoons.
Why is it that the animals enjoy reading the email?
Well, Ms. Benes, cartoons are like gossamer, and one doesn't dissect gossamer.
Well, you don't have to dissect it. If you could just tell me why this is supposed to be funny.
Oh, it's merely a commentary on contemporary mores.
But what is the comment?
It's a slice of life.
No, it isn't.
A pun?
I don't think so.
Wolfstein?
That's not a word. You have no idea what this means, do you?
No.
No. Then why did you print it?
I like the kitty.
We love the kitty. We put it out to cat books. There's even cat cartoons in here. I think you can dissect gossamer. I mean, in that episode, of course, Elaine does a cartoon where there's a pig at a complaint station in a department store, and the pig is saying, "I wish I were taller." And, hey, that doesn't really make any sense. We actually ran that as a caption contest on our back page, and the winner was, something that does make sense, "Stop sending me spam."
There you go. So you're right, though, that your initial reaction to the Seinfeld episode, written by
Bruce Eric Kaplan, B.E.K., yeah.
Former New Yorker cartoonist.
Not former.
Oh,
present.
Current at the time.
At the time, and still, he's one of our main contributors.
But your initial reaction was A2, Bruce? But you warmed up to it over time?
I warmed up to it, especially for this book, because I thought it was a great way, as I did it in a sort of comic panels, to contrast how The New Yorker actually works with this fictional account, which definitely has a grain of truth, because there are cartoons that you do get, and there are cartoons that you simply enjoy. A lot of Roz Chess' early cartoons were very, very strange. It wasn't like, oh, I get it. I put these two things together. It's just wild, sort of a wild and crazy cartoon. And that's part of sort of like a Monty Python type.
But what was your initial reaction about? Was that serious?
Well, my initial reaction was, truthfully, as was Tina Brown's, hey, it's all great because it's all about The New Yorker.
So, inspired by her meeting with a New Yorker cartoon editor, just for the fun of it, Elaine tries to write a caption for a New Yorker cartoon. She shows Jerry her line, 42 seconds.
It's a pig in a complaint department.
Yeah, and he's saying, I wish I was taller. See? That's his complaint.
I get it.
Do you? Because that's not a normal complaint.
How about if it was something like, I can't find my receipt, my place is a sty?
Everything you do has to be so jokey.
I'm a comedian.
I wish I was taller. That's nice. That's real.
Yeah, well, I got a complaint. This cartoon stinks.
And what was the caption that actually won?
Well, stop sending me spam. But interestingly, when it's thrown back on Elaine, and I commented on the book, she uses the same defense in a way. She says it's real, as though it's observational humor.
The Seinfeld New Yorker cartoon episode, one of the chapters, or a chapter about it, in Bob Mankoff's new book. He's the cartoon editor of The New Yorker. It's called How About Never Is Never Good For You. Let's hear what some people have chosen to save and post on their walls
Okay. And
under their refrigerator magnets, like Helen in Manhattan. Hi, Helen. You're on WNYC.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I love the cartoon. It's been up for years. It says it's somebody by somebody looks like her, their name is Harpelli. These three Upper East Side women are having lunch, and one of them says to the other, "I don't mind emotional trauma if I can turn it into a really funny anecdote." And that's the way I feel about my life.
And that's the way and that's how I wrote this book.
Is that Bill Haefeli?
Yeah, Haefeli.
Haefeli.
Yeah.
H-A-E-F-E-L-I.
And he's a wonderful, wonderful observational cartoonist. He's always listening. And let me give a little thing about cartoon listening and that I might be able to use. And this is a little shout out to my wife, Corey. I hope you're listening. So there was a CBS 60 Minutes was on Sunday, and we had waited a long time to see this about the New Yorker cartoonist. And it was a great clip. And then my wife, I heard her on the phone to someone saying, I'm so happy I'm going to buy more shoes on Zappos.
Let's run through a few of these real quick and
sure.
See what people have saved. Tom in the East Village, you have one from the 1920s?
Whoa.
Actually, now that I think of it, I have two. One is the famous James Thurber cartoon where the couple's lying in bed and on the headboard is an enormous seal. And the caption is, "All right, have it your way. You heard a seal bark.
Have it your own way."
And the other one was the one from the 20s where the housewife says to the little kid at the table, you know, "It's broccoli, dear." And the kid says, "I say it's spinach." And I say, "The hell with it."
Right. Well, those are two cartoons. And one of the interesting things is that Thurber cartoon, which people love so much, that could be an I don't get it cartoon. When you think about it, it's sort of a create. And Thurber, when he talked about how he created that, he was originally drawing these seals out in the Arctic with explorers, and the thing looked like a headboard, and he just threw on that line. And so that's an example of humor that we sort of enjoy just because it's so crazy. The other line was written, Carl Rose drew the cartoon, but that line was written by E.B. White.
Wow.
And an interesting thing is it's still the 20s, so it's still got a call and response. It's still a two-line caption, which you hardly see
anymore. One about the broccoli and the spinach.
Right. And I did a riff on that with the Supreme Court case where Scalia was saying that, what are we going to be, mandate people to eat broccoli? And I had the kid say, I say it's government mandated broccoli, and the hell with it.
Ha. How self-referential.
Yeah.
Jan in Maplewood, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jan.
Hi there. How are you guys? Thanks for taking my call.
What you got?
We had one on our fridge for years that was a mother talking to her young son saying, "You just have to accept, honey, that all the other children are inferior to you." with three small children, we thought that just perfectly summed up parenting in the 21st century. So,
thank you very much. Do you find generational differences in your cartoonist humor? I don't mean their subject matter, which might change with the times, but any underlying sensibilities that might define cartoon humor and even, you know, human experience in different times?
And really the universe and all these gravitational theories, everything. Yeah, I do, actually. I mean, one of the things, if you look back in the 40s, the cartoons are very observational, and the people in the cartoons never make the joke. They are acting. We're looking at them. So there's a woman at a baseball game. She's looking at her watch, and she's saying, "Why didn't they tell us there'd be an extra inning?" She's not making that as a joke. It's sort of stereotyping women. Later, you might have an Alex Gregory cartoon, more recent, maybe 8-9 years ago, where one woman is saying to another, "I started my vegetarianism for moral reasons, then health concerns, and now it's just to annoy people." Now, that's a sitcom line. That person is making that joke, and Alex Gregory is a comedy writer, so is Bruce Eric Kaplan. When you look at these jokes, the people are clearly saying the joke. Yeah. That's different. The other thing that's changed more recently is the humor is more meta. It's more humor about humor and stranger and more deconstructing. So recent Zach Cannon cartoon, who writes for Saturday Night Live also, incidentally, it has like a snidely whiplash, and he's not tying the damsel on the tracks he's putting a panini on the tracks, and it's called Paninis of the Old West. Mm-hmm. Now that would never have been done. That's more about what it's really about is mashup culture.
Right.
We're just putting lots of different things together and having fun with it.
A few people are writing, noticing how meticulously you've corrected callers' words a few times on, you know, the language of the captions. And so Josh wants to know, is specific word choice important to you? Is never good for you versus does never work for you? Does it make a difference at that level?
I think one of the things is you go by your first instinct, your advice. To deconstruct that cartoon, he's saying, why is it funny? I'll give you my little analysis. Because it's clashing of two different contexts. The language is the language of politeness. No Thursday's out. How about never? Does never work for, is never good for you, which is what it is. Well, it's good because it flips the bad. But also, you need is never good for you because it maintains the politeness while the message is rude. And so it is really, really actually important. And it's not perfect, but sometimes there can be too much compression. It's an art, not a science.
We have a couple of minutes left.
Sure.
And, you know, to me, the real action in your book is the chapter called David Decides, about the involvement of the New Yorker's editor-in-chief, David
Bennett. Yeah, yeah.
And you described how he pulled in the reins a bit after the Tina Brown era and shook off Tina's inclination to shock, as you put it, and he came in the late 90s. One example of that inclination was from 1996, two guys at a bar, one looks over to the other and says, I just did a huge one in my diaper. So why was that funny to Tina Brown, but you refer to it today as veering so far?
Well, first of all, I want a little shout out to Tina. I thought Tina was great. Tina made my career. Tina, you know, Tina shook up the New Yorker, I think, just like it needed to be shook up in a lot of ways, and certainly in the humor. And so the pendulum, I thought, moved a little bit too far towards just a type of vulgarity. And the New Yorker isn't essentially vulgar. You know, I'll say a bad word, you can bleep it out. We don't say the F word. Why? Now, I'll tell you, I had a great cartoon once which had a Tony Soprano guy, and he's saying, if these walls could talk and they knew what was good for them, they'd shut the F up. But we're not going to print that in the New Yorker. It's a whole tone. I think Tina wanted to change that tone, and she moved a little bit. But we still have pretty edgy cartoons, and David certainly for doing those. So, you know, I think it's a good balance. And one of the great advantages David has is he has a very, very good sense of humor. Anyone who's actually heard him talk or be interviewed, you know, there's never an interview or a talk that David does where he's not joking a bit.
30 seconds. You have a chapter on how to win. This is a holistical thing. It could be on BuzzFeed, your own New Yorker listicle. How to win the New Yorker cartoon caption contest. Give me a 15-second condensed version.
Okay, you got to try because you get better at doing it. You've got to do lots and lots of different captions and try to select the best one. And then you've got to free associate. Then you've got to go take a shower. Then you've got to have a drink, smoke a cigarette, and then write your caption.
If only Elaine had been the beneficiary of that advice, things might have turned out better. Bob Mankoff, cartoon editor of The New Yorker, the new book, How About Never? Is Never Good for You? My Life in Cartoons. So much fun. Thank you.
Thanks. Great to be here, Brian. Great.